Discover card to make the pledge of support. It's only a $35 pledge of support to WBAI, but we're going to give you 3 hours of material for that, 3 hours of preparation. Do you know what foods you need to have on hand? Do you know what foods last the longest? Do you know how much water you need for you and your family? Do you know what should be in your first aid kit? Do you know what happens in the case of a power outage and all of the power goes out in your community? These ideas are all covered. These eventualities are covered in Gary Null's What to Do When Disaster Strikes, 3-hour webinar for you. Gary has donated that material to WBAI for our listeners so that you too can be informed. It's imperative for all of us at this point. In fact, we may be able to find material here that we can pass along to loved ones who we can't reach currently. 516-620-3602. What do you do to keep your water fresh? What do you do to keep your family fed? What do you do when disaster strikes? Gary Null, 3-hour webinar, yours for a pledge of just $35 to WBAI 99.5 FM. Please pick up the phone now. Make that call of support. We have to raise $3,500 during this hour. We need to hear from you. That means 100 people calling. 516-620-3602. Dial that number or visit give to WBAI.org. Stay tuned next as we commemorate 50 years of Jim Freund here on WBAI. We will be joined by James Irsay, Janet Coldman, and Jim Freund in the next hour. Please stay tuned. 516-620-3602.
In 1967, Gentle Ben was waving his paw from our TV sets. The Electric Prunes was in the bins at Sam Goody. Miniskirts and boots made for walking were seen on every street. And at the WBAI studios on East 39th Street, Little Jim Freund rang the bell, and the rest is science fiction. Join Jim, Janet Coleman, David Dozer, Matt Schmidt, and myself, James Irsay, as we honor Jim's 50 years in show business, Monday, October 16th from 3 to 5 p.m., right here on WBAI 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. See you there. In 1967, Gentle Ben was waving his paw from our TV sets. The Electric Prunes was in the bins at Sam Goody. Miniskirts and boots made for walking were seen on every street. And at the WBAI studios on East 39th Street, Little Jim Freund rang the bell, and the rest is science fiction. Join Jim, Janet Coleman, David Dozer, Matt Schmidt, and myself, James Irsay, as we honor Jim's 50 years in show business, Monday, October 16th from 3 to 5 p.m., right here on WBAI 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. See you there.
On October 1st, shocking images shot around the world of Spanish police attacking Catalonians at polling stations as they tried to vote in a referendum on independence from Spain. Massive protests for and against independence have since taken place in Catalonia and across Spain. Debates about the future of Spain are erupting countrywide. Conversations are heated. Why is this happening now? What's next? The Independent is hosting a roundtable on the topic on Monday, October 16th at 7 p.m. at the Brooklyn Commons Cafe, located at 388 Atlantic Avenue in the Borough Hill section of Brooklyn. That's Monday, October 6th at 7 p.m. at the Brooklyn Commons Cafe. Don't miss it.
On Saturday, October 28th, the Southeast Queens Federal Credit Union is hosting a dinner theater party at the Black Spectrum Theater in Queens. The play is The Kingfish, a musical comedy based on the 1950s TV comedy show Amos and Andy that takes place in present-day Harlem. Dinner is at 6 p.m. The play starts at 8. The Black Spectrum Theater is located at 177th Street and Baisley Boulevard in Jamaica, Queens. For tickets and more information, call Liz Blaney at 917-294-0895.
And you're listening to WBAI in New York. Janet Coleman. David Dozer. James Hersey. Max Schmid. And Jim Freund. Celebrating Jim Freund's 50 years at WBAI with Jim Freund, Max Schmid, James Hersey, David Dozer, and Janet Coleman. Good afternoon, everybody. This is James Hersey, and we're here to celebrate Jim Freund's 50 years at WBAI. And by the way, the rest of us are no slouches either. Let me introduce our panel of experts.
As the panel introduces, I'd like to hear from each person how long they've been affiliated.
Good idea.
Okay.
Janet Coleman.
Well, we've been here, David Dozer and I have been here longer than Jim Freund. We gave him his first line that I ever spoke on the radio. So, but, you know, who's counting? We left in between, came back, came forth, and then he got us back again for, I don't know, something like 20 years ago. So we were reborn thanks to Jim Freund. Don't you consider that a major rebirth or being stuck in a sandbox?
Minutes.
either way you might call it. Yes. Well, history will be explained today, will it not be? The history of Jim Freund and his connection with the great series Poisoned Arts.
Of the bunch of us and the history of the station. But most of all, what's most important to me is me. But
okay. So
the most important thing about history, as I recall from being in school, this is David Dozer, is the dates that you have to remember and memorize, and this is the significance of history.
There will be a test.
Yes. And so in terms of Poisoned Arts and Janet Coleman and myself, Otis McClay and whoever else, we were on the air April 1st, 1967
That's
with
right.
our first okay. Show. So okay. that was 50 years and some months ago.
Who's counting?
No, you had me before then, I think.
No.
Because one of the reasons that I came to BAI was I was listening to the PYP programs for young people that would have been in this slot, 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah.
And I heard you. Poisoned Arts wasn't on there. The radio was, that Rapsang production. But I listened to Poisoned Arts before I began in May 1967.
Oh, so we were here a month waiting for you to show up.
That may have been it.
Yeah.
And you did. There you were, little Jim.
That was one of the
reasons. And as Eckhart says, the rest is pure science fiction.
The rest
fiction.
Is mystery.
Well, we don't know. You never left. We all left,
James,
right?
When did you actually start
back and forth.
The station?
I arrived at the station fresh from my tour of India and Saudi Arabia in 1971.
Okay. So
that's when we came back the second time.
So
and that's when by that
you,
time.
Yeah. So the three of us are 150 years and 71
makes
46.
46.
So if Schmid shows up, we'll have over 200 years.
What do we get for that? Anything? Do
no.
We residuals?
You're looking at it.
Yeah.
Double yeah. your salary.
Yeah.
We will double your salary.
Well,
we're all unpaid, so it's easy enough
that's
to
what
do.
What happens
to
here?
Double the salary.
Sucked into that freedom, that lack of censorship, that untrammeled un. Yeah.
But the difference is, not speaking of age differences, that when I started in 67, I was 13.
Well,
and I wasn't on the air until you put me on the air, which I think was like 68, maybe?
No.
71.
71.
That late.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, we came back to do a second variant of the Poison Arts programs. The first ones were done on 39th Street, and they were 15 minutes long. No, they were half an hour, but the segment about the old man, the young married couple who adopts an old man from the welfare department, Charles and Emily Andrews, Mr. Warburn, that was a 15-minute segment on a bigger, longer show called
right.
Poison Arts. And then we were kicked out. And, we got kicked out. It wasn't us either. It was Otis McClay. That's a rumor I heard. I don't know.
Well,
I was
we ran out our string. We did 13 shows. That was all, that's what we were set for. Now, it was whether or not we were going to come back for our next season.
Yeah, right.
We didn't know. And we weren't really dying to do it.
Like television today, really.
Yeah, very much. And that we were not picked up. We weren't exactly kicked out. Or you could say we were kicked out and not picked up.
And then one night in 1971, we got a call from David Rapkin, who said, I'd like to remember your show, Poison Arts? And I said, yeah, I do. And he said, well, I'd like to produce it again. He produced one episode of Poison Arts before he was ready to kick us out, too. But luckily, the Zhang part of the partnership was there to say, I'll do it.
Peter
and
Zanger.
Then it must have been February, because your first program, your first line ever on radio,
was for George Washington.
Was for the George Washington birthday party.
American Party.
Society, right.
Yes. The society.
Right, okay. And now, you want to hear that line?
Do
you remember it? I bet you do.
There'll be sex in the streets, don't need no sheets, come dig the exotic orgasmical feats.
Okay, this is...
The erotic.
Let's match it up with the actual
first line. This is the
15-year-old
boy?
I guess about 15.
Okay.
71, 16.
Contestant number two, the young poet from Yellow River, IP Daily. There'll be sex in the streets, don't need no sheets, come dig the erotic orgasmical feats. Now, thank you.
Nope. And I question the plural of feats, but
feats. Well, we have
like
that.
These feats were made for walking.
Do you think? Do you think it's fair to put it in context and listen to you in the groundwork of the American Society celebration?
I think that's up to our host.
Okay, we want to play that.
Was the question?
The question is now. Let's hear.
I was counting sheep.
Let's hear him in the context of the whole radio.
Oh, that's
production.
Coming up right next, isn't
okay,
it?
Okay, yes, it is.
So well, let's do it.
We're not messing up at all.
No, I think we're unbelievably awake and on it.
Now, next on the George Washington's birthday party agenda, a few words from Uncle Sam.
Thanks.
The Lost and Found Committee reports they have someone's bald eagle.
What color?
Well, what color? It's eagle colored.
Mine was blue.
Well, whoever lost the eagle-colored eagle should pick it up now, as the eagle has already begun to eat the other items. So far, a wig and a musket. Thank you.
I'm hungry, Charles.
You are?
The pie-eating contest will be coming up soon.
Sure, look at all the pies.
I hope the eagle doesn't see them.
Next on the GWBP agenda, before we get to the pie-eating contest, you men can relax for a minute.
Men? Is it just for men?
Oh, Emily Ann.
I want to be in the pie eating.
Oh, well.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah, all right. Okay, fine. Pie eating's open to everyone. And thank you for your honesty there, little lady. Very George Washington of you.
You're welcome.
Next on the GWBP agenda. Let's sit here for a while.
The Toastmaster said I was very George Washington, Charles.
Well, what did the refrigerator say?
He was right.
Thank you.
People aren't usually that honest unless a cherry tree falls over on them.
What?
Next on the GWBP agenda, the final judgment of the Radical Amateur Show. Contestants number one now from Sacred Money High School, Ron and Rhoda Ringolivio.
Smoke dope, give me that heifer gonna smoke some dope. Good enough for George at Valley Forge. Untie the prisoner, I'm gonna smoke some dope.
Contestant number two, the young poet from Yellow River, I.P. Daly.
There'll be sex in the streets, don't need no sheets, come dig the erotic, orgasmical feats.
Now, thank you. Contestant number three, from Open Kimona, the youngster who did the naked tap dancing, Seymour Hare.
And by the way, who was Uncle Sam?
Well, Steve Post.
You could tell, couldn't you? He said Zygazunt.
In that.
I believe that wasn't in the script, was it? Was that an improv?
I didn't write Zygazunt, no.
No, I
but yeah, we asked Steve to say something as Uncle Sam. Yeah.
You told me in the past.
Sacred Money High School.
That he.
So, Jim, as long as you're here, and as long as this program is about you, tell us how you arrived at WBAI.
Steve Post. Well, that's true. That's true. Okay. When I was but a teen, my uncle did two things for me. Number one is he got me to read science fiction. Number two is he brought me to WBAI, and where I filled out pledge blanks, just as people allegedly are doing now. And and at first, that's all I was doing. Then I took on a job as, quote, a bouncer. But the main thing I
bouncer?
Wanted...
Bouncer?
As the bouncer,
kicking
yes.
people out of the people's radio
checking
station?
Checking them in downstairs.
Oh, okay.
And because we are on the third floor, 39th Street. And I think they didn't want me on the premises of the station. So they put me downstairs. Was a way of stopping me from being underfoot, which
stopping you from being upstairs.
Yes, exactly. And And what I really, and the thing that attracted me to the station were two things. Number one, listening to the PYP, to the radio, to Poisoned Arts, to the various radio dramas, to everything that Baird Searles was doing. And he was our drama, remember when we had drama and literature?
I do remember.
Yeah. And then number two was I would stay awake all night on weekends listening to The Outside with Steve Post. Mm. And I wanted to find out what he looked like. So there was this very small window into the control room, and I was there with my nose pressed to that, and it freaked him out, as well it should have. And
were you surprised by his face? Because very often, seeing a radio personality in person is startling.
I'd say 100% of the time.
100%? Yeah. But
pretty much so.
Was he much more handsome than you dreamed?
I wasn't gauging him.
Come on, Jim. We know your heart was pounding.
But, and then I was queried by Charles Pitts, who was very polite about a refusal. But he liked young people.
Uh-huh.
And
can we retake? Do a retake on that?
No, it's all innuendos intended.
Well, Charles.
Oh, well,
Charles was a magnificent broadcaster. We should mention.
Yes, he was.
He was a wonderful voice on our air.
We're hearing about this sort of behavior. We might as well hear it all.
Well, that's what he discussed on the air. So it's not like this was private.
Right.
In any way, shape, or form. It's what he discussed.
So was he jealous of you and Steve Post?
No. He was very nice, and he helped teach me how to edit and all that good stuff. He was always a kind and charming personality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. A very kind of a cannon buried in flowers, as Schumann called Chopin, Charles Pitts, because he was always so low-key in his, at least generally speaking, you know, a very quiet kind of speaking voice and, you know, under control.
And that ties into one of the first things that really drew me in. Remember that I was very much into science fiction, and BAI had, the D&L department had four of the best science fiction writers in the world doing stuff. And in October 67, exactly 50 years ago, Samuel R. Delaney was producing The Star Pit, which he was narrating himself, that Pitts was doing some work on as well. And I made that production happen because somebody had to go fetch the water, go get coffee for people, roll the joints, whatever was needed to get that done. Actually, I don't remember doing that
in the history of WBAI, you've been very important in that respect because you knew what was part of a production, how much water everyone drank and so forth.
But that's all under the bridge.
Pretzels would choke people. Yeah. That was very important to the production of a number of things.
Well, in a way, especially at 39th Street, where there was a water cooler. But to get coffee, soda, anything, somebody had to run down, go to 39th Street, I think to Lexington Avenue from there, get something and come back. So that is...
Or they couldn't leave the microphone to do this. You had to do it.
Well, they were doing radio drama.
Right, exactly.
So it wasn't live radio. There was an ongoing thing. People, by the way, I just broadcast the Star Pit week and a half ago for the 50th anniversary, and I'll have Delaney back.
Okay.
But and he was here for his 75th birthday.
Okay.
The place downstairs at 388 was crowded. Mm-hmm. They had to lock the doors, literally. People can watch it on live stream, by the way. But it was the radio drama. It was the... it was the 60s, you know. It was an amazing, heady kind of thing. And I was coming to the station rather than going to school.
Ooh.
And doing all kinds of stuff. But I was just learning how to edit. And all the important background jobs for... I guess from what you say, about 3 years until you guys put me on the radio.
Well, then we were in the church when we came to do that.
That's right.
Program.
By 71, we moved to the church in 71.
And that was a splendid, an extraordinary radio facility. It was
unbelievable.
A church hollowed out for a radio station.
Yeah. Spoiled us all.
Yeah, very much so.
So there were
Robert Goodman Memorial Broadcast Center.
Huh. Is that what it's named, or we call
that
it?
Was, no, that was, no, that's what it's
called. I never heard that. Really?
Yes, Carolyn, Carolyn Goodman's husband, who had a lot, and Carolyn Goodman and George Fox were the board members who helped raise much of the money to buy the church. We owned that building.
And that Carolyn Goodman, our greatest patron, really, was the mother of Andrew Goodman.
Yes.
But not the guy who ran, who was the manager of the radio
station. Goodman was not.
Ed Goodman, though.
Who was part of Bergdorf Goodman. Was,
yes.
Either way, they contributed a lot.
Yes, very much so. Now, Carolyn Goodman and George Fox and those early board members were all godsends, as was in the early days John Simon, who was the first.
Yeah.
The music Johnson.
Board member. No. No, not the musical.
The critic, John Simon?
No, oh, the editor at Random
House. He was the manager.
Okay, the Random House.
Who became, years later, but he was the first board member. In fact, he was the entire local board for about 6 or 7 years. Mm. And also, the person who really ran the station was Kathy Dobkin. Mm-hmm. And she did not care for me a great deal because I was a little kid.
And you didn't graduate from high school. Did you just drop out of high school?
I just, the day I could legally do so, I dropped out.
Wow.
With my father's permission.
But that was kind of not unusual at WBAI. Did you finish your studies there in college or high school?
I did finish high school, but from a mental hospital.
Okay. Oh, well, that's two of us.
And the difference between a mental hospital and WBAI is?
Pretty similar.
Trick question.
Seriously.
So, but there were really many, many autodidacts at WBAI, and they contributed, and they all had very strange areas of expertise.
Yeah, but at my level, you really had to be affiliated with people. You had to have a job. So I was working primarily with the music department, otherwise known as the Musidept. That was when it was Mike Saul and Dan Cavanaugh.
Eric Saltzman.
Eric Saltzman, Barbara Oka.
Dan Cavanaugh.
And Tony Ellicher.
And Tony Ellicher.
Now
who is now a lawyer, I believe, or some sort of fighter for legal rights.
I get
rights.
Things from Facebook on him for the Columbia Collegium. So he's still involved with music.
Is that a musical group? I don't know.
That is a musical group that, in fact, performed at the WBAI Free Music Store.
Uh-huh.
And the Free Music Store was a major part of my life because I was the door gnome.
Jim, I remember you so well, standing at the door and taking people's contributions and stuffing them in the gigantic water bottle.
Yeah.
Now, did they put you at that spot to keep you out of the music store?
No, I chose to do that.
I chose to do that.
When I had an actual paying job, I worked retail. I'm very good with customers.
And you're a good counter.
And later on, I was a cashier and bonded cashier and all that. So, yes, I was good at counting money.
Who bonded you? I'm a little confused by this.
I'm sorry?
Who bonded you?
A bank.
Oh, a bank bonded you.
Yeah.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, I mean, the place I was working, the restaurant I was working, I guess we can say the Rainbow Room, got bonding for me.
This is more dramatic than we ever dreamed, isn't it, Jim's life?
Because
he was working, you know.
Peeling away the hidden layers.
He wasn't
here.
Just Oliver Twist here begging for food. He was working his way through WBAI.
Well, that is true. Then, not now. I'm looking for work, everybody.
But, that's why we're here. Yeah, there's money for you.
Yeah, there we go. But
By the way, if I can interrupt just briefly, I do want it to be known and to remind our listeners, our lovely, dear listeners and generous,
our listeners, supportive listeners, especially.
That we are in the midst of a fundraising effort at WBAI, and you all should realize that we're accepting contributions at 516-620-3602, and we have a special Jim Freundlich related
offering.
Well, I came up with the idea, but it was Janet and David who did.
And I thought it was the other way around. Didn't you come up? Whatever.
Janet, what do we have? It's fabulous premium.
It's a collaboration of great renown. Oh, really, and it's a wonderful thing
David
to have.
David had the idea that we should do something. I came up with the idea of a wormhole.
Whatever.
And then you guys printed it out.
Fortunately, nobody wrote this down. This exists merely on the paper that is like, as Dr. Michio Kaku calls it, suitable for framing. It is called the WBAI Wormhole Certificate Special Apollo Edition, and it can be signed with your name for $50. You get this Be it known and proclaimed to all that your name is recorded as the true and legal owner of the next wormhole designated as a WBAI wormhole located within the nearest galaxy. This ownership will last in perpetuity so long as the wormhole remains stable and a proper singularity. Said wormhole may be sublet as a vacation property or willed to heirs or leased to motion picture producers, or issued for product endorsements.
That last part David wrote.
This certificate is duly recorded by the WBAI Wormhole Authority on Earth, New York City, and signed by Dr. Michio Kaku, theoretical physicist, City University of
New
York.
And it's an actual autograph.
It's an actual autograph.
How many of these do we have?
I can't say about. I'd say enough for everybody listening now.
Three cartons worth.
We have plenty of
so
WBAI.
So a donation of $50.
We Dr. Kaku's hand wore off while we made this collection of certificates.
Would anybody like to remind our listeners what a wormhole is?
Yes.
No, it sucks. A wormhole is, as mentioned, a singularity when. They're not positive what causes it, but basically it takes in. It's an entity in space so powerful that it takes in even light. So it's called a wormhole because nothing escapes from it, nothing can be seen, it just takes things in. We are still learning more and more about such singularities, although, given that they emit no light or radio waves...
Because they can't escape this.
And why
we can't see them.
Why was this an inspiration to us all? Why did we want the wormhole? Can you remember?
Well, a wormhole is also used to travel through to get to the other side of the universe quickly. Because
or to a different universe.
Right. Yeah, you travel through it, perhaps, unless it chews you up pretty good.
That's it. Okay.
Might.
So but
if it doesn't,
it's
then
a quick
you,
escape.
Yeah.
516-620-3602. Support us with $50, and you will get... Let me take a look at that channel,
yes,
please,
definitely.
If you would.
Read that signature again.
Wow. Look at... Whoa.
It's quite a signature.
It is quite a signature.
Signature of a famous theoretical...
It's a very
physicist.
Confident signature.
Oh, yes.
And
right, it's not one of these little teeny-weeny signatures.
And before he was super famous, we may
He was only moderately
This looks
famous.
Very cool.
He was known within
really?
The radio community and to some people, but he hadn't come out with his first book, Hyperspace.
And he wasn't on the side... His picture wasn't on the sides of buses, and
oh,
he
God.
Wasn't on the History
you
Channel.
You cannot... the Curiosity escape. Stream. He has
yes.
basically his own channel.
That's exactly
more
it.
Or less. But
Planet
yeah.
and himself.
Yeah, pretty much.
So there you have it.
It's very nice.
Again,
it's a very nice
thing.
And it's got some heft to it, you know. I mean, yes. it's absolutely. If anything was ever suitable for framing,
this is.
We bought the good stuff at Staples. We bought the quality,
the best
quality. Yeah.
How about some music, somebody? Anybody? What do you think?
Well, because we mentioned the free music store, I have a request of which music to play.
Okay.
And the free music store was. Is there enough noise out there? The Free Music Store was a live concert series. Wednesdays were just for the public and started at midnight at Washington Square Methodist Church. And
well, that was the first once,
actually, the first
yeah.
location was Martinson Hall
mm-hmm.
and then moved to Washington Square Methodist Church. And Saturday nights were in our Studio C at our own church.
Yes.
And I got to guest produce twice a few years after Ira Weitzman had taken it over. Ira now runs something called Lincoln Square Musical Theater.
Yeah. Something like that.
Something
yes.
like that. Yeah, I
love to see
people
Ira.
People who are in music don't go away from music. They just may.
No, he produced things like South Pacific.
Yes.
He's gotten I don't know how many Tony Awards, but he let me produce a free music store, and I made a phone call to the person who wrote the theme music that we played earlier, Peter Schickele, and this is what Schickele came up with. Large enough to invite audience in and have people
there. But all right, no. I clicked on Schickele songs.
No, wrong one.
Wrong one. Okay, what do you see?
As You Came from Walsingham, first item.
Oh, okay. All right, take two. If one is not enough for you.
You came from war.
She died a pure and virgin lass, for he slew her youth, the knave.
Miserere dore, miserere dore, basso la di da. Hocus pocus, ha ha ha.
Take that lady bright, or William bid you sing. Behold her lofty angel flight, towards God and Christ the King.
What's not to love? That music of Peter Schickele.
An extraordinary thing, because these are the kinds of things that we can do at WBAI when we have our full resources. And
which are?
Well, a live studio, which actually in the building in which we are situated now, we could do again if we become funded.
That's right.
That's what it takes.
And what's the number to call?
The telephone number is in New York City, well, actually in Long Island, is 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602.
And you can get a personally signed certificate of ownership for a wormhole out there in space somewhere. By the way, can these be passed down to descendants?
It says so right on the certificate.
Suitable for you can put it in your will and will it to anyone you like.
To your heirs and assigns.
Okay.
So it's called the WBAI. You ask for the WBAI wormhole certificate. If you're scrolling around,
it's great. It's a wonderful. It's the best premium I've heard about on the whole in years of fundraising.
Really,
I know. I love it.
I've had to be special for you who use none.
And it's amazing how much money we spent to acquire those wormholes, and we're passing on the savings to the listeners.
That's right. Yeah. These are discount wormholes for sure. The WBAI wormhole certificate, $50.
So Jim, since that was Schickele performing live, and Schickele wrote the opening theme music for Hour of the Wolf, music that Margot Adler chose, because she created Hour of the Wolf, and Schickele, I chose the Schickele not only because I think it's wonderful. All I did was make a phone call, and he did the rest. But Schicklie is, I would say, quite a figure in classical music.
Well, he is, and he's quite a figure in my life as well, because I studied composition with Peter Schicklie when I was in Juilliard prep, and he was a graduate student composition assistant professor. And I will say that I never would have imagined his sense of humor, because he was really a quite a straight-ahead, by-the-book composition teacher. And a very good teacher, by the way.
He used to say that he studied cafeteria at Juilliard.
Yeah.
And as far, how far were you, James Ursay, from WBAI at the point that you were a student of Peter Schicklie?
Well, it was quite a bit earlier. I was like, 13 when I studied composition with Peter Schicklie, and he was still a youngish graduate student. The Free Music Store has great memories for me, because I gave more than one Free Music Store.
That's right.
Participated in them, not only my own, which were great, because my audience would show up in Studio C.
And it was a very piano-tuned for you.
Yes, that big Baldwin concert grand. So it was a very friendly, supportive audience. And
shiny as a basketball court, the floor. It was like the nave of the church.
That was my job.
Polishing that floor?
Sweeping and mopping.
Wow, not bad.
And setting up the pews and throwing down the pillows from the balcony where I often lived.
And was he on canister when you were playing, James?
Yeah, I believe he was. I think he was there from the beginning.
I was the door gnome from not the very beginning, because I never worked at Eric Salzman started with Liza Cowan. Was the original curator of the Free Music Store.
Well, I gave a free store with Eric Salzman. We did some of Eric Salzman's songs performed by a wonderful singer named Alan Titus.
Ooh, I remember that name. And Eric and Mike Soul and some of those people are still out there, bless them.
Yeah.
And still doing fine work.
Oh, yeah.
But the Free Store was a very special place where we could have people literally off the street, or sometimes taken off of subway platforms, brought in to perform. But we also had the Guarneri String Quartet.
Cleveland Quartet, too.
Yeah, the Cleveland Quartet. We had Patti Smith.
Fred Shevsky.
Steve Reich. Mm-hmm. For those who can, we had when Candy Cohen took over the Free Store.
After Gregor Piatigorsky. No, we didn't.
we had a lot of new music, not wildebeest music, but modern.
Mother Mallard, Masterpiece. Company.
My favorite. I wish I had those recordings of Mother Mallard's Portable Masterpiece Company. They were the best in electronic music and perhaps minimalist music, for my taste anyway. They were absolute. My favorite piece of theirs was called Grover Whalen Next Door. And I used to play that on the air all the time. But my tapes were washed away. That's a story.
Now, when you...
I had a flood.
When did you become the Hour of the Wolf? When did you get your own regular program?
Well, Margot Adler was our weekend news director working with Paul Fisher. And she was on salary, and she made a deal with the station manager, Jerry Coffin, I believe, who came to us from the War Resisters League. And the deal was is that she would go on unemployment. Still do the weekend news, but we were not a 24-hour-a-day radio station. Bob Fass would sign off when Bob Fass felt like it.
Bye-bye. Larry Hoste would sign off, too. Bye-bye.
Yeah. And Josephson, of course, had to go on at 7 o'clock sharp. Mm. And Margot made the deal that she would be on the air during that betwixt time, which is known as Vargtimen in Swedish, or in English, Vargtimen is Hour of the Wolf. And there is an Ingmar Bergman film came out in 1967 called Hour of the Wolf. And she named the show after that. I was her engineer she did the show 5 days a week, and she did incredible radio. And on Mondays, her frequent co-host was either Mike Hodel or Neil Conan. He came to no good.
Yeah, he just dropped out of sight.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Disembodied voice. Still, he's on NPR again, I think, isn't he?
He's come back. He came back to
NPR. Came back after retirement, yeah. He does wonderful radio.
Yes,
and Neil, by the way, also did a science fiction show with Baird Searles on BAI. Thursdays and Fridays, I was Margot's co-host. And then after a couple of years, Adler went to the Clarion Science Fiction Writers Workshop, which is a six-week workshop, an amazing thing. And I had a choice of going to that workshop, which I could not afford, or taking over her show. And I did. And when she came back, she got a different time slot. And I held on to Hour of the Wolf. And I'm still, as they say in Sondheim, I'm still there.
And the rest is science fiction.
As you say, and the rest is mystery. But and Margot and I found the theme music by Schickele in a 69-cent store. Do you remember those?
Mm-hmm. They were 99-cent stores later, but first they were...
But first they were 69
cents. $1.09.
Do you remember the 69-cent breakfast special?
No. Where was that?
Where was it? On
Upper Broadway.
I'll go over there right after this show.
It's $1.09 now.
Yeah.
Now it's a $6.90 breakfast special.
So we chose the opening theme music together. And Adler went on to do great radio here at WBAI. And then she got a job, first freelance, then on staff at NPR. And when she went on staff, they told her she couldn't moonlight. So that was the end of her official.
Yeah, that happens.
Her official association with BAI. Not that she didn't drop by every couple of weeks. And at least one time, she came on Hour of the Wolf at 5 a.m., which is the Vark team, and Hour of the Wolf being that twilight, morning twilight is what it actually means. And I put on the theme music, and I put it to the point where we faded down when there's music under. And I said, good morning, this is Hour of the Wolf, and your host is Margot Adler. And I walked out of the room, leaving the mic live. And she did 2 hours of great radio.
Wow.
She was like that.
Mm.
Yeah, an amazing mind.
Yeah.
And didn't write a bad book either.
No, she wrote 3 not bad books.
Yeah.
4, actually, if you count
I think,
her chapbook. They're all in print.
She passed away just after her last book was written. Poignant cancellation at Barnes & Noble of her speaking engagement there because of when she passed
away.
She
didn't have a bad grandfather either.
No, Alfred Adler
was,
as in Freud, Adler and Young.
Possibly the least irritating of the three.
Possibly.
Mm-hmm.
I rearranged the mailboxes at BAI because there was a guy named Bill Young. And so I put the mailboxes together at 62nd Street so they read Freund, Adler, and Young. So, which is why they didn't want me messing around
with the mailboxes anymore.
I understand why they wanted to get rid of me down there.
Well, there's no problem with the mailboxes here, is there, Jim?
None at all. None whatsoever. I work out of a home office nowadays. I come here to do the radio show at 1 a.m. But
at least you live in the same borough.
Now, yes, mm-hmm. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. I can actually just take a bus from here to the corner of my from the corner of here on Atlantic and Bond to the corner of my house.
So it's right there, huh?
Yeah.
Wow, what luck.
Jimbo, how about a quick music selection, a few minutes of 3.5 minutes of music? You want to tell us something about Spaceman?
No. Margot and I both played it a lot.
Oh, let's play it one more time then.
Shoot 'em up, destiny. Bang, bang, shoot 'em up to the moon. Bang, bang, shoot 'em up. 1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3, 4.
I wanted to be a spaceman. That's what I wanted to be. But now that I am a spaceman, nobody cares about me. Mother Earth, would you bring me to send me real soon. I wanted to be a spaceman. I wanted to be it so bad. But now that I am a spaceman, I'd rather be back on the pad. Hey, Mother Earth, won't you bring me back down safely to the sea? Around and around and around and around is just a lot of lunacy.
Harry Nilsson, Spaceman, a favorite song played frequently on Hour of the Wolf over WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio at 99.5 FM.
Were you an enabler of Abbie Hoffman? Or did you care? Were you his caretaker, or were you his producer?
I was his partner.
Partner on a business adventure?
On a business adventure for WBAI.
How do those two things go hand in hand, business and WBAI?
Basically, Abbie, who John Simon knew from his days at Random House, John published Steal This Book. And then our program director, who's not quite as beloved as some may be, John Scagliotti, called me into his office and asked me, after an Hour of the Wolf, to go meet Abbie Hoffman at a coffee shop. And Abbie lived on 34th Street. The station was on West 35th Street at the time. So all I had to do was go across town and find out what Abbie wanted. And I love meeting celebrities and stuff. And Abbie wanted to create this three-ring circus kind of radio show called Radio Free America. And so we came up with the idea of producing a benefit at what used to be the Fillmore East that had become a on-site gay sex club called The Saint. But this was the AIDS era. This is the mid-80s, and The Saint was no longer doing that. So we were the first people to rent The Saint, and Abbie and I were partners, and it was an exhilarating and horrifying experience because he did not take his meds always when he was supposed to.
And then what happened when he didn't?
He would go nuts. One time I was walking east from the radio station, and I found him with like crepas drawn flyers, even though we had professional flyers for the benefit, and he was handing them out at like 3 a.m.
Well, those will sell now for a lot of money, whereas the good flyers are buried in a trash heap.
Right. Actually, the good flyers are still valued by...
Are they?
Yes, because the guy who designed them, Stu Schiffman, was a beloved artist of science fiction stuff. So,
reminding people, but just let me throw this in just briefly.
That we are at?
That we are at WBAI New York, but also that we're celebrating 50 years of in show business of Jim Freund, and Jim is surrounded with three other BAI dinosaurs, myself, James Irsay, Janet Coleman, and David Dozer. And if anyone would like to do their Max Schmid imitation, this would be the time to do it.
Bob Dole. No, I can't do it at all. No
and
one,
also, I want to remind people like, that, first of all, it's wonderful that really Jim Freund is a walking archive of WBAI history for the last 50 years, and we're thrilled to be here and hearing this stuff. For many of us who were there, bells are ringing.
Right. And forgetfulness stops because Freund is here to tell us what happened.
That's right. That's right.
Now, this is what happened to us. We were gone at Jim Freund's suggestion. Poison Arts came back to WBAI.
Well, Jim Freund got the suggestion from somebody else.
From?
From John Ordover.
From John Ordover.
Who was the editor of all the Star Trek books for Simon & Schuster.
And an editor of Tor books, correct?
Yes, he was at Tor.
Well, he was at that time, anyway. And you
So he'd already left Simon & Schuster, and then he was at Tor.
Right. Called us one day, much like... Well, not very unlike David Rapkin, who said, I'll have enough of this after one program. He said, John Ordover called, and he said, what about whatever happened to Poison Arts? And we said, well... We said we stopped. So he said, "Why don't you come back?" And I said, "Why don't you come back and do it at BAI?"
And the thing is that there was no time slot available. So
That wasn't quite it, though. We said, "Why do we want to do that?"
Oh, that was on your.
Why would we come back? That is sort of like going backwards. And we said, "Let us do a stage presentation," because we were involved in doing theater work, and. We put on like live radio as a stage play, the way they did it in old time radio, you know, with a Foley and mixed and all
that.
Well,
you had done that in the early years with "Don't Touch My Coconut."
It's true, we had done it a few times, right? A few live radio productions, "Don't Touch My Coconut," and I guess other ones. Anyway, yeah, we did them on location.
Yeah,
a carriage house
with audience.
In a carriage, with audience, and that was fun. So that's what we wanted to do again, and what Freund did was he invited, and it was all about broadcasting. The theme of it was Charles Andrews started looking for his father.
Oh,
and,
there's a play I wrote
called. Well, before we get to that, just to mention, we couldn't get a time slot, so I spoke with Matthew French, our arts director, and we got the 5 minutes in between two shows.
That was later.
Oh, that was later.
Yeah, that was...
Oh, God, yes, of course.
It was Anthony Sloan who was the arts director.
No, it was Matthew Finch.
No. Anyway, I'll prove it to you.
It may be Sloan when you did the full one. So it was Finch that we got the Poison Art Minutes.
No, it was Anthony Sloan. And it was the same night we decided to record this whole program. Just tell what the program is.
I wrote an episode of Old Opt called Late Night Spots.
That's it.
Where Charles discovered that you could air in New York City, I think it's true today, you could air a 1 minute commercial overnight on a major station for $5, especially if you bought 20 of them or something. And because nobody listens to radio overnight, almost.
Theoretically.
I mean, not enough to count them. But, of course, people listen to the radio all night long because some people have to get up in the middle of the night and go work or something. But anyway, so we did this show called Late Night Spots where Charles Andrews goes to some announcing schools. He goes to Fast School of Audio Arts and the Steve Post School of Announcing Excellence or whatever. And then even the Jim Freund School of whatever it was.
Maybe his was Audio Excellence.
Maybe it was.
But Jim Freund had his own school, and we put that play on. And, of course, Freund and I
had totally forgotten about that.
Yeah, well, that was a big deal because the later minutes refer always to that first, Charles Andrews' first school of broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
And
no longer just flapping in space.
No longer flapping his arms in infinity, right? It became, but still sort of out there in the air, which was something like the WBAI wormhole certificate. Also interested in outer space and science fiction fantasy. You know, the shows were always geared that way. So what you did was you invited the arts director, Anthony Sloan, to come sit in the audience watch this
thing.
That
I did, yes.
And he said, why don't you come back to WBAI and do that? That's when I said, why would we do that? And anyway, we came back just to record that episode. And while we were recording it, this guy, David, and you and Anthony Sloan are arranging for us to do Poison Arts Minute, since there wasn't time. We would do a minute show every day at 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Fantastic.
Which actually ran 3 minutes.
Which actually ran 3 minutes. Right. Very hard, because it's just the opening and closing took about a minute. And then they started to put it on. And then Jim played it on Hour of the Wolf. And then they got in it. Then the people in the morning were complaining. You arranged it. And then they played it morning and afternoon. So I believe this is the first of the Poisoned Arts Minutes. And now, for the difference between Jim and his little kid voice, and now he's evolved to major stardom. This is
Poisoned Arts!
Hold up. Charles Andrews, arm-flapping goof, and his pretty young wife, Emily Ann, are at home watching cat radio cable TV with their cats, Ichabod and Marty, and Mr. Wobburn, the old man they adopted from the welfare department.
Meow.
Meow.
There's a new show on, Emily Ann.
What is it, Ichabod?
Meow.
It's Because That's Why.
Because That's Why. The same answer to every question on Because That's Why.
Wow.
Thank you, and welcome to Because That's Why. The first caller with the first question, please.
Why do people engage in warfare?
Because That's Why.
If we're guaranteed free speech, why does the Federal Censorship Commission fine radio stations for indecency?
Because That's Why. Next caller, please.
Why do you have the right to be so flippant in the answers to the callers with serious questions?
Because That's Why. We have time for one more question.
It's a three-part question.
Hurry, please. We haven't much time.
Why is the sky blue, the grass green, and blood red?
Because That's Why.
You've been listening to Because That's Why. The same answer to every question.
Charles, the cats fell asleep.
Well, they had a long day.
What was the name of that show, anyway?
Because That's Why.
Why would they put a show like that on the air?
You've been listening to Poisoned Arts with Janet Coleman, David Dozer, Barbara Anton, Bob Fast, Jim Freund, Simon Lokley, Nick Ullett, and Peter Zanger. Written by David Dozer, directed by Anarchy. Radio technique by Peter Zanger. This program is produced in the United States of America.
Poison Arts! Charles Andrews, enemy agent submarine sinker, is home watching cable television with his pretty young wife, Emily Ann, waiting for Mr. Wobburn, the old man they adopted from the welfare department.
You are receiving Cat Radio Cable TV, video for cats, audio for their keepers.
What's on next, Charles?
Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello?
Hello, honeys. I'm home.
Hello, Mr. Wobburn.
Hello, Mr. Wobburn. You're just in time.
I know. Just in time for hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello. It's the show about people answering the telephone.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
Ooh, a rerun. I've seen this one.
Poisoned Arts with Janet Coleman, David Dozer, Jim Freund, Mary Mellison, Steve Post, A.J. Sloan, Sidney Smith, and Peter Zanger is writ by Dave Dozer, directed by Anarchy, radio technique by Peter Zanger. This program is produced in the United States of America. Yes.
Poison Darts was so special.
It really was, wasn't it?
It really was. And
the cast of thousands.
John
so
Lithgow among them.
John Lithgow?
Did he do any No, episodes? René Auberjonois.
He did Cabrillo
Close.
Cafe.
Close, but no cigar.
Cafe. He did Under the Gun.
Under the Gun, under that's the right. Gun. I was
he
confusing
did Under the Gun.
He did Under the Gun.
Wonderful, bizarre show. Now, if you want to cue up that other piece.
We're ready.
Okay, so I'll just tell a very brief story about that. One of the great writers of science fiction and fantasy, Michael Swanwick, who last year was the Worldcon guest of honor, who's been nominated for more literary awards in science fiction than anybody else in the history of SF, and as Michael says, which means that he's lost more awards than anybody in the history of SF, once told me, he said, do you know anything about, there was a radio show I was listening to when I was at NYU called Train of Thought. And he said that he heard that, and it totally floored him and deeply influenced his writing.
David Dozer's script.
So with that, why don't we hear a little piece of Michael Swanwick?
People ask me why I'm such a good storyteller. Well, I ought to be. I learn how from the storyteller Rock himself. The storyteller Rock is as old as the hills, and he started telling stories before there were any ears to hear them with. He invented storytelling. He told the first story that ever was. Over the years, he made up all the stories that ever were or ever will be. He told them all. He told them over and over to himself until they reached their final forms. Every story you've ever heard, he told it first. And he told it best. I met the storyteller Rock when I was a boy in Winooski, Vermont. There was a field out in the woods, and there he sat just a little in from the edge, old and rounded and powdered white with lichens. Down low to one side were three small holes, just big enough to stick your little finger into. If you brought him a cigarette, lit it, and stuck it in the bottommost hole, he'd smoke it down to ash, and then he'd tell you a story. I stole a pack of my mother's Chesterfields from her purse and fed them to him one by one, a story of smoke. When it was gone, I waited my chance and stole another. At first, the storyteller Rock found it hard to focus on me. He had the long view. He kept confusing me with the last kid who gave him tobacco and telling stories in Iroquois. But as the years went by, we got to know each other better, and he taught me a lot. He was a good teacher, but tough. He didn't take any guff. I remember how he said, "Boy, you'll never be a first great storyteller until you learn to stop being so goddamn sincere." Well, I listened to him, and now I'm not.
Well.
Michael Swanwick.
Michael Swanwick. But how does he say it? How does he spell it? Swanmaker?
Swanwick. Like
Swanwick. What a wonderful name.
Yes.
Yes.
A wonderful person.
The wick of, what's it the North Koreans are saying? The wick of war, something
yes.
like that. Swanwick.
He lives in Philly, but I saw him at a science fiction convention last
year.
So
do you realize that? You have, David, impressed.
You should read his stuff. I think you would both enjoy it. He's an extraordinary writer.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's great news.
Speaking of writers, you've had an incredible array of hugely popular science fiction writers in your day.
Sometimes I don't care if it's genre or anything.
Roger Zelazny.
Yes. I did a six-hour interview with Zelazny that I am very, very proud of.
These are names we remember from, like, pulp science fiction magazines.
Right. Yeah, well, Ray Bradbury.
With pictures of those beautiful paintings. What was the name of that great painter? There was one I'm trying to remember his name.
Well, there were a few. Chesley Bonestell?
Chesley Bonestell, who married a musician. Pianist.
And, of course, there's Ed Emshwiller and Ed Emshwiller's wife. Yeah, well, he was a major video artist. He was one of the earliest computer video people out there.
Right,
where he and his producing partner, Ed Catmull, Ed went on to stay in New York and do avant-garde stuff. His wife, Carol Emshwiller, is a major science fiction writer. She's with us today, 95 years old.
Wow.
And Ed went on to be the videographer of the PBS production Lathe of Heaven. which was by Ursula K. Le Guin, which was a two-hour movie. It's starring Bruce Davison and other good people.
But there really is hardly a major science fiction writer that you haven't covered, with the caveat, by the way, that they had to come to the studio, to the studios of WBAI.
In the middle of the night.
In the middle of the night. They had to be on live. He did not interview you with your, no matter how great, unless you showed up live.
Nowadays,
in the
if I know you, I am willing to do a Skype interview. But otherwise, people do need to be here. And occasionally I record. Let me just mention, by the way, in naming the names, my very first live radio show was with Isaac Asimov. Aided and abetted by
it's amazing.
By Frederick Pohl and Lester Del Rey. And I was terrible, and Asimov was all over the place. And it was Fred Pohl and Lester Del Rey that kept him in line, because they were often on the air with Long John Nebel. So they knew how to do it.
Yeah.
And I was, sad to say, the very last person to do an official interview with Isaac. So there was a beginning and end, bookend. Mm. There with Ike. That was quite something. I've interviewed Heinlein. I've interviewed Ray Bradbury.
Right.
I dare say there are...
Any women in the mix, I would say?
Joanna Russ, Ursula K. Le Guin, N.K. Jemisin, who is pretty much at the top of the heap nowadays, and she's also the science fiction critic for the New York Times.
Mm-hmm. That's an amazing amazing list of interviewees, Jim. Really astounding.
I actually have it printed out right here in tiny little letters. Pamela Sargent, I mean, lots and lots and lots of women. Women are, today, I would say, make up the core of much of the best science fiction and fantasy, all that out there. And a lot of gay writers and... You know, starting with Samuel R. Delaney, who's gay and black, so we got all kinds of groups there. Well, and, of course, I worked for Chip. Delaney is known as Chip to people. Susan Powlwick, Tamora Pierce, who, for people who read young adult fiction and kids' books, is very popular. A very, very brief interview with somebody named J.K. Rowling.
How'd you get... Why was it so brief?
Because that's I went why. To Margot Adler's. Yeah. That's right. I went to Adler's apartment one day, and there was this woman there who was enchanting Margot's son because he was a big Harry Potter fan. I didn't know who this woman was, and Margot said, "Are you carrying your mic?" I said, "Yes." And she said, "You should introduce Joe here." And Joe who? Joe Rowling. Oh, like in J.K. Yes. So it was like so, and she was already out the door. So, you know, we called her back and did like 2 minutes. So that's why it was so brief. Philip K. Dick. That was a really bad interview.
Why was it bad?
It was a handheld mic in the middle of a science fiction convention during a party. And everybody was in party mode.
What does that mean? That's nerd
means
city.
We were stoned.
It means carrot sticks. And,
it, yeah,
right. Oh,
it means stoned out of our gourds.
It means lack of focus, basically.
Yeah. What he said, exactly. Theodore Sturgeon.
Wow, there isn't anyone left.
There are a few people. Arthur C. Clarke. Well, he did sort of a free music store once. He did a whole thing in Studio C, talking about how he helped invent a concept that people didn't quite know the use of at the time, called the GPS, which he did invent.
In science fiction or in reality?
In science, in reality.
Oh, in science, he did
in
that.
In science,
huh?
He did that. He came up with the idea of the geosynchronous satellites that could then be used for positioning things. So that was his basic idea. Other people actually did the science work behind it, but it was Clark who thought it up and gave the idea. And WBAI did, I think it was the world's first around-the-world broadcast with all these different people coming in through satellite, talking to Clark, who was at the center of things. And Clark was holding court, which for him is an appropriate phrase, in Studio C.
So the rest was science fiction.
And that was produced by Paul Wunder.
Aha, another science.
The names of the stars keep coming.
Well, yeah. You know, it was a pretty unusual place, isn't it? When people had their specialties, they delved rather deeply into them, didn't they? And they brought them to the radio so that it was probably called a university of the air, because people really were scholars of their own radio topics, including all you yous included.
Let me interject one thing to remind our listeners that we are in the midst of a fundraising period at WBAI. We've been very been focused on our mission here, which is to celebrate Jim Freund and to basically have a bunch of BAI
and
dinosaurs.
The other dinosaurs.
Talk about what we've experienced.
Get it to 51 here, right? But, we need money all the time.
Let's ask our listeners if they'd like to contribute. Again, we have this is really a BAI history lesson here, and not only Jim, but David and Janet, and a modest contribution from myself.
Not to mention Max.
Not to mention Max, who's really been the stalwart. He's the anchor of this whole group here.
Just waking up.
I can tell people how Max came to WBAI.
First ask our listeners to dial 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. Again, I want to make the point.
Or go to give2wbai.org.
Right. Two being a number, not a word.
Either will work. Either will
Oh, really?
Work.
We're
yes.
not.
T-O
we've
will work.
Managed to. Rid ourselves of...
You can search for the WBAI wormhole certificate, which will cost you only $50 and will be entirely for the support of this radio station.
Thank you gift in exchange for your donation at 516-620-3602 or by going to WBAI.org and just following the prompts, or you can even text.
I also want to make the point that we're four producers here who have been at WBAI a very long time, and I know that we have listeners who have been on the other end of WBAI for a very long time, and there's a reason for that, and those are the people that I think the people who've been here longest are the people who've contributed the most and are most eager to continue their contributions. And if you haven't done that yet during this fundraiser, because they do go flying by like a pack of cards being shuffled, you know. I want to remind you that this is a fundraising period.
That's the idea here.
And we're looking
you
for
support us,
long-term
we
supporters.
We're nothing but a pack of cards. Two of the 516, I often give out the old phone numbers. 516-620-3602. I've been known to slip and start with the Oxford 7 number.
Yes.
That from
39th. How about the 826 number?
Well, that was the best. Frank Heller actually recorded a song for that phone number.
Somehow new people would be bringing up these old phone numbers. Interference of memory with old.
Do you remember your childhood
pitching.
Phone number?
Yes, I do.
Yes.
I think it was CL72050.
David, do you remember
yours? Lying.
That's my grandmother's phone number, Everglade 4011. That was in Pittsburgh.
Jim?
I was Illinois 8, and I won't give the whole thing because people try it, and actually that's still my brother's phone number.
Well, those people who have that number, they're probably hungry for phone
Illinois.
Calls coming in.
Do you remember yours?
I remember my Levittown phone number, PY Pyramid 60562.
Oh, that's obscure. Pyramid.
But I remember that I gave out the Oxford 7 number and the 826 number on the air, and in the middle of the night when I was on the air, people were dialing those numbers to see who's there now. And waking up people in the middle of the night, you know. So my mission was accomplished when I did that.
All right, 516-620-3602. This is the number for you to support the station that has kept the interest of these four people for a total of, what is it, about 800 years total or something like that?
About 190 years.
The time is getting
slower
and slower.
Yeah.
516-620-3602. We would love to see your name as a contributor during this particular program, which is very dear to the four producers who are with you.
How's about a pledge for the four people for $190? Because
is that our total years?
Because 4 into 190 is equals what is the reason for that?
Because if you add up how many years, Janet and David 50 years, me 50 years, you a mere 40, you're the newbie.
I always felt like the newbie, and I still do. Seriously.
So that if we add up the number of years the people in this room have worked
You could do it by the minute, too, and they have to pay the most.
And Jenna, tell us about the wormhole again, because I think this is the coolest thing since sliced bread.
This actually is a very cool premium. And this is to a person who never uses a premium. James Irsay does it just on the beauty of his own voice.
The program is the premium.
His own lies.
Okay. I came in at another point. They were selling things, whatever. Anyway, this is a WBAI wormhole certificate, the special Apollo edition. Your name signed up. David does this. He inks you in, right? You
do. Well, I have it in a computer.
Is this registered, by the way, Janet?
Yeah. Yes, it's registered.
Yeah, just checking.
WBAI wormhole certificate, and you ink it in.
Well, your name, or any name you would like, can be printed onto the certificate and with your own unique serial number.
You can make it.
What a present this would make.
Yeah, it is a great present.
Yeah,
buy a bunch of wormholes.
It's a time of year. Give it for Halloween.
They're only $50 a piece, right? Send you and your broomstick out into looking for your wormhole.
Only $50. That is cheap.
$190.
Heavy duty certificate. Don't make up stuff.
And it is signed by Dr.
By Alfred Einstein.
Yes. It's almost Albert Einstein. This is the current Albert Einstein.
He is.
Michio Kaku. His signature right now is probably worth $60. So you're making $10 if you support the station and get a WBAI wormhole certificate.
He sat there and signed every one and believed
what
in this.
What a guy.
What a guy, right? And it was he who noticed that this wormhole certificate, heavy as it is, was suitable for framing. Immediately. Get that frame now.
Yeah, we actually we did a few special on the Apollo edition, which this is.
Oh, this is a more special edition.
That's right.
Well, we can provide a frame for another $400, by the way.
It was like the 25th anniversary of the Apollo landing?
Something like that. Maybe was that the reason for this?
I think certification? For that edition.
Anyway. Now, Dr. Kaku is off in his own wormhole somewhere. Rarely do we see him, but his signature is everything. That's the deal. Make sure you call that number, 516-620-3602.
It's astonishing to me, although I understand completely, that before any of us, except maybe Jim, says the phone number, we have to crane our necks to read it off the wall when we've been saying it every other month for like 12 years.
It's one of the least intuitive numbers.
It really is.
Ever
it's
had.
Just a pip.
Well, it's a good thing that the best way of remembering it, as I always tell my listeners, is that once you're through with the 516, the 620-3602 is the same backwards and forwards.
Oh, come to think of it.
Yeah. No, it's not.
It's not. It is.
I just tell them that because they'll believe anything.
So it's a non. Yeah, so it's very important that we chose a non-palindrome.
That's right. Certainly have chosen the hardest phone number there. I don't know if there was a choice involved, frankly.
Well, I mean, even the Oxford 7 numbers, for the barter department and for the main pledges, were. I don't know why I remember them so well, but there was something rhythmic.
There was rhythm in the number, and you were a kid.
Yeah.
You hadn't added so many phone numbers to your repertoire.
Yeah. Also there was something about the exchanges having names.
Oxford, of course.
Oxford.
How classy
Illinois.
It was once upon a time.
Yeah.
Now 212 is considered a prized area code number. You know,
oh, yeah.
People
oh, yeah.
will
you can't get
buy
it.
Your area code.
I have one that will trump every other phone exchange.
What's that?
That's my grandmother's number. On the Upper East Side, on East 80th Street, Butterfield 8.
Oh, there you go.
4687.
Elizabeth Taylor.
How about
Taylor.
That, huh?
Elizabeth Taylor.
Is your grandmother still there?
Her spirit is.
Her spirit is still
there. But she haunts the apartment.
In that satin nightgown she's
wearing. She was a Yorkville, and of course she was Hungarian.
She was in a different business than the movie by that name.
She, with my grandfather, ran a bra and corset and ladies apparel shop on First Avenue.
Oh, that's not so far removed from the movie.
Not really. No, very close. You remember that slip she wore?
Yeah. How about some more Poison Dart stuff?
Okay, let me I'll tell you just a drop about this. Steve Post was no longer at the station. He was at his other station.
NYC or QXR?
NYC. He was, I think, full-time at NYC. And I don't know if he had to make a deal that he could only... But I think also he couldn't bear his own genius, you know. So he could only take a little of it at a time. And so to do a show at WBAI would mean opening the doors to the...
That's a good question. I don't know if he did overlap with those two stations.
QXR and...
No, he was never on QXR.
Whatever.
Yes, he was.
Post? No, he wasn't.
I think he was.
No, I know he wasn't.
For about 3 months.
Really?
Yeah.
He was?
Where were you, Charlie? You weren't peeking your nose through
his
window.
You may have been in Wisconsin at that time.
I was never in Wisconsin.
You weren't? I thought you were.
Wait a minute.
You were teaching at one
point.
You're talking of Indiana.
We're relying on this guy as our historian. He doesn't even know you were never in Wisconsin.
And I'm sure Post was never on QXR.
I didn't say I was an accurate historian, did I?
I really don't think Post was on QXR, but I'll ask Laura.
Anyway.
Do ask Laura.
It was we went to Steve's studio at NYC, and we said, David wrote him a whole bunch of lines.
One page worth of lines, yeah.
Page worth of lines. And he recorded them very briskly. I mean, he was a master, you know, I mean, you could get him in and do a commercial or a pizza, a little line.
Sure,
meeting. He could just read off the page perfectly.
Sure.
And so we use these lines over and over and over, but none more than this. This line that appears on the following recording. This is...
Poison Darts!
Charles Andrews, freelance flapper in Infinity, and his pretty young wife, Emily Ann, are visiting the Bob Fast School of Radio Technique with Mr. Wobburn, the old man they adopted from the welfare department.
Hurry up, Charles. We don't want to be late to the unnameable auditorium.
Well, what's the big deal? It's probably just another lecture about chaos.
No. It's a guest lecture by Professor Post.
Oh.
Don't dawdle, Charles.
I never dawdle, Mr. Wobburn.
Professor Post is the best. I don't want to miss one word.
Hoop.
It is better to practice with professionally written material than just making anything up.
Brilliant. Professor Post is so eloquent.
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 Speak the speech, I pray you, as I pronounce it to you trippingly on the tongue.
He's a genius.
Genius.
Hello.
Three beautiful daughters. Middle-aged Dave Bland is the star of his own television sports segment, Dave Bland's Utah 21 Championships. Dave takes on two opponents for some hoop.
Hello, who is it?
This is...
Charles Andrews is at home with his cats Ichabod and Marty, his pretty young wife Emily Ann, and Mr. Wobburn, the old man they adopted from the welfare department.
It's time for Because That's Why, Emily Ann.
Again? That show's like the amoeba that ate cat radio.
Meow.
Because That's Why. The same answer to every question on Because That's Why.
Thank you, and welcome to Because That's Why. The first caller with the first question, please.
Why did you put me on first when I specifically told your producer I wanted to be put on last?
Because That's Why.
When you're traveling on a trip somewhere, why do people always have to give you an answer when you ask for directions, even when they don't know? Why don't they just say, I don't know, when they don't know?
Because That's Why, Mr. Traveler. Next caller, please.
I'm bothered by tourists. Every day they're asking me directions. How do I get to Times Square? Is this the way to the river? Where is the Dig Rizzard Museum? Why do they always pick me to ask?
Because That's Why, Mr. Hometowner. Time for one last call. Our last caller, please.
I don't want to be the last caller anymore. I want to be the last at first, but then you put me on first, so I don't want to be last anymore. Why can't you people get your act together?
Because That's Why.
Wow, that was more than just another great episode. That was a behind-the-scenes look with no punches pulled.
And I bet you know why it's so popular, don't you, Emily Ann?
Hmm?
I know why, Mr. Wobern. It's entertaining, it's upbeat, it's contemporary, it fulfills a need.
I didn't ask you, Charles. Huh? I said I bet Emily Ann knows why it's so popular.
Why Emily Ann and not me?
Because, that's why. Poisoned Arts with Janet Coleman, David Dozer, Jim Freund, Simon Lokley, Jim Sherman, Anthony Sloan, and Peter Zanger is written by David Dozer, directed by Ann Arkey, radio technique by Peter Zanger. This program is produced in the United States of America.
That opening voice is that of Bob Fast, by the way.
Poisoned Arts!
Poisoned Arts!
He did everything he possibly could to make his beautiful voice unrecognizable when and if he was on Poisoned Arts.
Well, he recognized it.
He recognized it. Cajun waffles. Why do people Cajun waffle?
The memories come back like Cajun waffles.
Oh, yeah.
Indeed.
Yes.
That was
him, though.
You know, you shouldn't say that too often because somebody will open a restaurant based on that. I mean, what isn't there out there?
Cajun waffles.
You know why?
Why?
Thank
you.
Thank you. It was a trap. Okay.
There was a because that's what, too.
That's right. there was actually a book called Scripts that published some of them under the name Oldopt, which we should say is OL-DOPT.
Standing for the old person who gets adopted. That was the original name.
Yes, it was one of the worst titles. I come up with some pretty bad ones. That was like a code name.
Code name.
Thing that I could tell myself what this is about, adopting an old man.
But if you ever come across a copy of Scripts magazine in a bin somewhere,
grab it. You can find them sometimes.
I have one somewhere.
We have one. It's a magazine of the... It was a magazine
was a
that Joe
magazine.
Papp published called, under the auspices of the Public Theater, and Erica Monk edited it, and it was quite a remarkable collection of plays,
And she had never heard any of the recordings of the show, and she just had read the scripts, and then when she heard a recording, she said... No. The scripts are better.
I have to say that, I knew, of course, the episodes that were published exceedingly well. I listened to this over and over again when I could. Couldn't record them off the air in those days. Hello! And just thought I'd say hi to everybody out there.
Yeah, right.
And when you read them, they were... It had a whole other dimension because you could take your time with the lines.
Right.
It's not just, radio, the timing and all that is so important. And God knows that you, David, wrote them in, and Peasy certainly know how to play with the effects, hold off on the little zinc, ba-da-da-dum, or whatever.
Oh, brilliantly done, yeah.
But when reading them, they have a whole other wonderful dimension of dementia in surrealism.
Well, that's right. Because radio is theater of the mind, but reading is...
it's another form of
also the theater of the mind.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, a great place.
It really is. It's why Barrett Searles called his productions the Mind's Eye Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Which other people have tried to adapt that name through the years, but never were as good as Barrett Searles' productions.
Mind's eye was
exceedingly special.
Does your mind have an eye?
Huh?
Do you know where your mind's eye is? I think it's right here, isn't it? Right.
That's the third eye.
That's the third eye. Yeah. So where's the mind's eye? Where is it?
In the nose, maybe.
It's in the lower back.
Lower back.
Yes, there you go. Of course.
Well, that's called the mind's eye. The mind's eye, yes.
In the cervix.
The cervix.
Yeah, in the cervix.
I think it's in the left patella.
From Freund, Adler, and...
And young at heart.
Yes. Exactly.
There we go. Telephone number again, 516.
Yeah, good idea, Jim. I want to mention that I think a call came in, and I'd like to acknowledge that caller and to encourage other callers. And
do we have
that always
say it on the air?
In honor of Hour of the Wolf.
Oh, that's
$100.
Great.
Thank you.
That's
and that's an anonymous donation, but I can say that it's from Ontario, Canada.
I know who the person is.
You do?
Yes.
don't say
it's
it.
It's a long-time listener.
Good.
Oh, that's really good. Yeah. Let's have some more of
that's wonderful.
You
so let's have just a brief few minutes to make it known to each other, to you, and to everyone here at WBAI that we're doing something positive. You can call 516-620-3602. For $50, you get a personally signed by Michio Kaku wormhole certificate. I love this premium.
It is
it's
a beautiful
elegant.
One.
It's the height of elegance.
It's witty.
It's the height of elegance.
The height. And you get your name almost embroidered into it.
Is it embossed?
It seems almost embossed.
We did, as I was mentioning. We
it's semi-embossed.
Got a picture of a wormhole on it, you know, like in fading degrees of warminess.
We'd really love to get some contributions.
A public domain image from Google.
During this celebration of Jim Freund and 50 years at WBAI. I mean, it takes something. A radio station, you know, it has to have something to offer, seriously, to keep not only Jim Freund here for 50 years, but David Dozer, Janet Coleman, and myself. And
what is it? It's the reason why you guys should be calling up and making some contributions. And here's the other
now
reason.
Now we're over 200 years.
Now we hit the jackpot here.
Max Schmid has just entered the room. David and Janet, I think you're going to have to share a mic and let Max sit there.
Okay.
Because nobody wants to share a mic with Max Schmid,
yeah,
that's for sure.
It cannot be done.
But it can be sterilized after the fact.
I come to bury Jim, not to praise him.
Max, good
the
to see you.
The egos that men may do is often teared with their bones.
516-620-3602. If you're a fan of any program represented by the people here, that's Janet and David with Cat Radio Cafe, as well as the next hour.
You've Max heard now the cats that inspired that program. Meow, 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 all that meowing. Were you one of them? Did you play one of those cats?
No, I think it was Locally.
Locally.
Yeah, Headphones.
Okay. Yeah. Simon Locally.
Yeah, oh, well.
516-620-3602. Go ahead,
why don't we play the last of the of Jim's Because That's Why-ishnesses, the Poison Arts Minutes, and then we can move along here. We don't have to really return to that time frame. But well, I want this one heard. Okay.
Tell me more about it. Is that on the Poison Art Sampler?
No, it's on I think it's all by itself.
Okay, so that's the Swenson's audition?
That's right.
Yeah, that's all set to go.
This is when Jim Freund, he played a character called Swenson, and we'll see how he happened to
Okay. We are astonishingly enough ready to go on this.
Okay.
Hello, Wizard.
This is
Poison Arts!
Old Oft, Charles Andrews, arm flapper in Infinity, freelance yo-yo, and his pretty young wife, Emily Ann, who together adopted an old man, Mr. Wobburn, from the welfare department, are auditioning announcers for the Thoughts of Charles Andrews.
Why do we have to have an announcer, Emily Ann?
I got a memo from M. Bugman.
M. Bugman, in charge of production.
I didn't get a memo.
Producers were memoed, Charles, not talent.
Well, what did it say?
It said, because of the loyal sponsorship from the League of Announcing Schools, who are, you know, the heaviest advertisers on Cat Radio Cable TV.
Oh, yeah.
All shows on Cat Radio must employ a minimum of one announcer.
Well, M. Bugman's the boss.
Okay, Marty, send in the first candidate.
Well, it's Swenson.
What was that, Marty?
Swenson.
Hello, Swenson.
Hello. Oh, hello, Andrews.
Oh. Swenson, it's you.
You know each other?
Well, Swenson and I were fellow students at the Jim Freund School of Microphone Arts.
You know, when my agent told me I was auditioning for the Thoughts of Charles Andrews, I was wondering if it could be the same Charles Andrews that I knew from school.
Oh, yeah.
Your own show. Really made it big.
Well, I had the show before I went to announcing school.
Hey, you want to hear me read some James Joyce Cold?
Yeah. That would be swell.
It's great seeing you, Andrews.
It won't be necessary, Swenson. There's just one line of copy on this job. Here, read this.
Oh, yeah. The Thoughts of Charles Andrews.
Thank you.
Next. You've been listening to Poisoned Arts, starring Janet Coleman, David Dozer, Jim Freund, Simon Locally, Steve Post, and Peter Zanger. Written by David Dozer, directed by Anarchy. Radio technique by Peter Zanger. This program is produced in the United States of America.
Well, I'm here, Max Schmid. Yes, heavily promoted, and finally have arrived. I was here until about 1:30 in the morning this morning, which is, I work here at night, one of the reasons I couldn't be here.
Did you always work here at night, from the moment you set foot in the door?
Pretty much. I mean, when I started producing, I had an actual job in Westchester. I would take the train in and basically stay in the big city for the weekend. And produce. I would produce all night, Friday night, crash somewhere around the station, and then get back to it. Because at the time I was doing the Golden Age of Radio, but we also had to crank out 5 episodes of the morning serial, later the daily serial, when it was no longer on in the morning.
It was on in the afternoons.
It was all over the place. It was on at 11:30 at night, 11:45, just prior to, I think, your show at one point.
When I did the Monday nights at midnight.
We had the morning serial, I think, was where it started out. So,
did you, had you experience as a radio guy when you arrived at WBAI?
My experience when I arrived was as a radio collector, which I started. I started in about 1967. Collecting the old radio programs.
Now, when you woke up in the morning as a small child and you noticed you had this voice, did it sink in?
I didn't have this voice. It took me 40 years of cigarette smoking to develop this. No.
But how is it, Max, you asked knowingly, that you first met people and got involved with WBAI?
Well, I first got involved and started listening to WBAI in the late 60s. Remember a magazine called FM Guide?
Yes.
Yeah.
And there I saw such things as A Touch of Strange was going to be on.
Produced by Barrett Searles.
Which was a science fiction drama, and I started listening in, and then I said, Doctor Strange.
Master of the Mystic Arts.
So I started...
Yeah, somebody should make a movie of that.
Yeah, I started taping programs, and then I heard this guy doing a science fiction show. And one of his guests was Ugo Topo. I have a tape of that that I need to give you someday.
Yes.
I think I may have a tape of your interview with Christopher Lee as well.
I would love to have that.
He
was wonderful. He was such a neat guy.
And who was it who had on the creator of Howard the Duck for 4 hours?
Steve Gerber? That might have been Ken?
No, it was a woman. I'll dig out the tape. But that's not the purpose of our story. It was the summer, I believe, or spring of 1977.
Mm-hmm.
A motion picture was opening.
And at the Ziegfeld.
Opening day. It was called Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And boy, did I have one. So I'm online, of course, like the kids do today, going to the openings when they have time on their hands. I forget. I'm not sure if I was working at the time or if I just had time to go. So coming up the line, I see Mutt and Jeff. I see, a short guy with a big hairdo. But, despite their scraggly appearance, they were carrying a recorder and microphones and interviewing people. So they got up to me.
They had just seen the movie.
And I hear the voice, and I said, this guy is Jim Freund from WBAI. And the other guy was Paul Wonder, who at the time was doing two programs, one called Soundtrack, which was just that, movie soundtracks, 3 hours on Sunday morning. He also was producing something called The Golden Age of Radio. Mm-hmm. And I had been listening to this for several months at this point, and, there were a lot of repeats. He had like 4 shows, and he would play them in rotation. And they sounded pretty awful as well. I think he was getting them from someone on the West Coast at a sister station who was doing a similar program. So I says to him,
And was very stingy because I knew who that other person was.
Okay.
And he had a lot more.
Ah, and probably sounding better too. But I said, look, I've got a big collection of programs. I can provide you with better sounding stuff and more variety. So I was invited to help produce the Golden Age of Radio. And the first project we did was World War II propaganda, an 8-week series, I think.
Fantastic.
Now, at the time, I was in the church. Well, actually, I was in the church only once. BAI was still at the church at this time. And so the first time, Paul had me on as a guest just to interview me about old-time radio. And I, you know, I had never been on the radio before. I was an acid casualty, shall we say. I was not well. And I was petrified, terrified. My brother-in-law actually taped the show, which I have the tape.
Ooh.
No one will ever hear it. I listened to it once and determined that no one would ever hear it again. But at any rate, I made it through that hour, and then I would bring Paul, you know, bundles of tapes. And it was like a speakeasy. You knock on the door, the little window opens. So I'm here to see Paul Wonder, and he would come out and meet me on the sidewalk.
That was a hello, who is it?
I never went in.
Yeah.
I never went in there. I would meet him, and we'd talk on the sidewalk. I'd hand him the tapes, and, you know, off I would go, and he would get it on the air. So, you know, a year later.
This is a church. It was like a speaking.
But the first time when we moved to 505, I went to a meeting there, and it was before they built anything. It was one big area, and there were like 100 people standing around the big outer wall having a meeting. The only thing that was in the room, I think, were cartons of Playing in the FM Dial.
Band.
Playing the FM Band.
Playing in the FM Band, yes.
Written by
Mr. Post. So, at any rate, that was my introduction to BAI, and about a year later, I started, I think, in the summer of 77, providing material for the show. And then in the fall of 78, Paul said, I'm not doing it anymore. If you want the show to continue, you have to do it. So I had to gather up all of my pluck and go on the air. I was trained by Rick Harris to edit tape.
Who was the drama and literature director at that time.
Yes.
And nobody trained you to speak?
No.
They
just threw me in there. So
not an unusual BAI story.
And I think the first slot was at Thursdays at 1. I mean, it was a ridiculous time slot, I think, for what we were doing. But, you know, then after about a year.
That's AM or PM?
That was a PM.
Okay, yes.
One in the public affairs time, or now health time.
AM actually made more sense, given who the listeners are. Maybe. Hard to say.
So then,
I like your current slot.
Yes.
Perfect.
And I've been there for a while.
And you should tell listeners what that current slot is for the Golden Age Radio.
Are we on Saturday morning at 8:30? That was a slot, if I had any idea how many listeners there were at that time, I wouldn't have hated that slot as much as I did.
Yeah.
Getting up, you mean?
Well, I was there overnight producing the show, so, you know,
it was breaking night anyway.
Tape went on.
People underestimate the listenership on Saturday mornings. Right. I did 5 to 7 for 39 years.
You may have to bring it back if David Rothenberg lives up to his promise to leave.
Well, you know, the lineup.
What are we going to do?
The lineup was locally, the Golden Age of Radio, and Lynn Samuels was next.
Oh, man.
So we got to insult Lynn.
This locally program. Still did 3.5 hours.
Yes.
Well, before
why the revolution hasn't come.
Right.
And the reason I say we was because about a year into my stint, a listener, name of Jack Shug, came along, who had been, you know, was another collector and quite a character, and he sort of glommed on and became my partner, which was kind of a relief because, you know, it was a lot of work. He had some interesting stuff to put on the air.
Some of it radio.
Yes. Well, that was later. So that was my involvement in BAI. I had another story to tell, but Jim prefers that I not tell
it. Well, I've told it on the air.
I know. I think you should tell it. I know what you're talking about. I think you should let it all out.
Let it all out?
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Whoa, what is that?
Now, I thought it was a night of sign. Back in the day, BAI was a little freer, so we would do things like, I remember the Golden Age of Radio took an all-day, I don't know if it was a Friday or a Saturday, we did all-day Golden Age of Radio and recreated the radio day with soap operas in the morning.
But Halloween night, there was a special.
Okay, so it was Halloween
from
night.
From midnight to 5, and I would go
I think
on
it was
five.
Even midnight to 8. I think it was going right up
until... No, because I was on 5 to 7, in
theory.
Oh,
okay.
In theory.
Because I know Rothenberg gets involved later in the story.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a friend at the time who dropped by. We'll just call him...
Oxo.
Oh, I was just going to call him by his other name, but we'll call him Oxo.
Yeah, then. The other name is too identifiable. Call him Oxo.
Oh, can't you
like good grips.
Can't we know?
Yeah, and the phone number, too.
No, there are legal ramifications there.
Really?
What's his phone number? Oxford 7?
What's the statute of limitations? But at any rate, So he comes in and, you know, being...
Involves federal law.
I would say 1983, perhaps. It was before... I mean, Jack was shown the door in 86, so it was before that, certainly.
Yeah.
And Oxo came in with one of those gallon freezer bags.
About 2 a.m.
Full of... No, no, it was before that, because we started at midnight, and you were kicking off the show. However, yeah. Before that
And I was
happened,
sitting on the board all night.
Well, we'll get to that in a moment.
Well,
so Oxo breaks out this bag of dried chips of some sort.
Dude.
And it turns out it was mushrooms.
Jim had the munchies.
Not the kind, yeah. And he said, have all you want.
It wasn't mushrooms. Well, it was shrooms.
Let me clarify. I asked how much of this should I have?
They call them magic mushrooms.
What is a good dosage? And he was and he took the question differently, meaning what quantity should I take home
for yourself,
with me?
Yeah.
Yes. So that's where the misunderstanding. Yeah, so he said take it all.
Well, he said take all you want.
Take all
and
you want.
And so Jim started eating them like potato chips. Like potato chips. He's pounding them down.
And they didn't taste very good.
No, and they were dry, and but at any rate. So come midnight, Jim is sitting at the console. We're getting ready to launch our program. And suddenly Jim is under the console, kicking and flailing.
Now it's closer to 3 or 4.
No. We went on at midnight.
Yeah.
Because Jack had to come in, and Jack was kind of like a biker type. He was big and burly.
You'd call him
brusque.
Benevolent biker, yeah.
Yeah. So Jack has to pick Jim up and drag him out from under the console, and basically took over the program from that point on.
Well, there was no, because I was sitting in there. Okay.
Okay.
This part I cannot forget.
All right.
And 5 a.m. comes around, and...
Well, that's what we're talking hours later.
Max puts on my theme music that we heard at the beginning of this show, and there's a point where I usually voice over. And Max opened the mic and whispered in my ear, "You're on." And I said, "Far bleeping out." Only I didn't say bleeping. And Max turned off the mic, Jack carries me out of the room.
Okay, you're right. I had the timeline wrong. But
yeah.
Yes. So from this point on, Jim is kind of whimpering. You ever see a dog dreaming with his legs kicking in the air?
This is dreaming. This is Jim. I did.
So you know, as dawn breaks and we realize that the station is about to be populated with regular
people.
Folks,
yeah,
especially Rothenberg was coming in for his program.
Daytimers.
And we needed to know, what do we do? What do we do with this guy? So Jack throws him over his shoulder. We take him down to, remember Dorothy Altman, of course,
yes,
who did premiums. She was a Bob Fass
groupie
bunny, whatever. And she had an office that was the premium office. So we decided, well, we'll throw Jim in there. We throw him in.
By this time, I have no recollection.
No. And he is still howling like a dog and making odd noises. And, you know, at this point, Rothenberg may have arrived. So I think Jack went in and threw water on Jim to try to calm him down. And
also, Jack had always claimed that I punched him.
Well, you know, when he carried you down the hall, you were like banging on the walls and ceiling.
And who knows if I did or didn't. but you know, the thing is that when he told me, "Well, that's all right, I won't take it personally this time," as if I had any control over myself.
Well, he did have a lot of fun throwing the water on you.
I'm sure that he did, and I enjoyed being one.
We all want to throw water on you, Jim.
Yeah. That's going to be the finale, isn't it? That you're...
So, you know, I mean, I think every science fiction host needs to take a trip to the Twilight Zone at least once.
Oh, I know a few people that I would... Well, anyway.
The Phantom Zone.
Was there any place for the Twilight Zone at 505? That was when we came back to this. There was no boiler room. There was no central force to go to the Twilight Zone.
There was the den.
The den. Yes.
Where was
a room
that
did not exist.
You go to the den?
Yeah, I remember the den.
Remember
on 8th Avenue?
It was
back there. It was where we used to watch movies.
It was
the VHS tapes and everything. It was
behind
like the Paul Wonder's what do they call it now? man cave.
His inner sanctum. Absolutely.
Well, there were a number of men in there.
And Dennis.
Barbara Joerner was there. Frequently.
Dennis Coleman actually built it, and it was the headquarters of MBS, which was Manhattan Broadcast Services. The janitors for WBAI. That's how I came.
And elevator operators.
Yeah. Well, I mean that grew out of being the janitors, basically. Right. He made a deal with Rosemary Reed, manager at the time, to take over, you know, like cleaning the station.
Yes.
And in the building we were in, we were on the 19th floor, and it closed at 9 o'clock. We were given our own freight elevator. There were three in the building, and we were given one, and so someone had to let people in and out all night long.
We'd have to go to a phone booth somewhere on 34th Street or near the, the clinic for methadone clinic? Around the corner, that was the street traffic.
And you call collect.
Call collect
so that we could refuse the call and save you a quarter.
Oh, was that it? I don't remember that. I think we wasted the quarter.
Many people did that.
Yeah, and then you'd come down and we'd go up with the trash and the mice.
Yeah.
You met fascinating people. I did that job maybe one day a week, and I was a substitute also.
Well, it was George, I think was his name, the guy who dressed like a villain in the Mickey Mouse cartoons.
Oh, God, yes.
With the short pants and the striped shirt and big, burly guy.
Yeah. And we always got to see them.
But then Mohammed was the night guy who was a character and not a pleasant one at that. So that's how I broke into actually working here.
That's right, and you were very good at your job.
Then at some point they added engineering programs into the job, which was never part of the deal, and I still resent it to this day. So,
yeah. Yeah.
And that was BAI in the 80s. What was that? When did we move into 505 8th Avenue? Right?
Right after we lost the church.
Exactly. Right.
We were going to be there on a temporary, he's wiggling his fingers, basis. Well, and we were there for about 20 years.
But we had most of a floor of an office building, and the space got subdivided and subdivided and subdivided. They kept making more offices.
And then there was another floor.
Yes.
Well, yes, there was that we didn't talk about. What was that supposed to be for?
Management.
Old magazines, I thought.
Oh, well.
And management.
That turned into another.
Old newspapers, management, and a big table there with, I don't know, fruit, coleslaw.
For some premium work, yeah.
And a balcony that people would go.
The balcony was a wonderful place, yes.
Was that anything like the den?
No, the balcony was the balcony of the building.
Well, the whole
22nd
floor was like the den for those who took it over.
The whole street was like the den, actually.
Yeah,
after.
Very much so. So,
you didn't go to drama and literature meetings, though, did you?
Yes, I did.
Did you?
Yeah, not everyone.
The first one
certainly.
I ever went to, we had college girls come in. Yeah. Oh, are we back?
It's that time.
It's that time. We're going to have to wrap it up, although we could go on for quite some time.
But
we will invite you to call 516-620-3602 for $50. Get yourself a wormhole for yourself and your descendants.
The WBAI wormhole certificate.
Jim, we've been celebrating you today. We've also been celebrating each other.
Yeah.
But it's been wonderful doing this.
I've had a lot of fun.
You've been here for 50 years, and you're working yourself up now for the next 50.
The next 50 days.
next 50 seconds. And Jim has requested this particular music to take us out. It's James Irsay here, Janet Coleman, David Dozer, Max Schmid, and, of course, our honoree Jim Freund.
Woohoo!
And Jim will be seeing you when? Tell him,
Wednesday
Jim.
Morning, 1 a.m.
Wednesday morning, 1 a.m. Okay.
It's a Simon and Garfunkel album, I think.
Let's have it.
Making a lawn. What is it makes a Saturday, October 28th, the Southeast Queens Federal Credit Union is hosting a dinner theater party at the Black Spectrum Theater in Queens. The play is The Kingfish, a musical comedy based on the 1950s TV comedy show Amos and Andy that takes place in present-day Harlem. Dinner is at 6 p.m. The play starts at 8. The Black Spectrum Theater is located at 177th Street and Baisley Boulevard in Jamaica, Queens. For tickets and more information, call Liz Blaney at 917-294-0895. Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Gabriel.
This is a call for artists.
WBEI needs your support.
We are conducting our second annual fundraising art exhibit and auction.
Your contribution of artwork can help support the programming here.
Only an excess of truth can protect us from an excess of lies.
The event will take place on November 16th at the Chesterfield Gallery on Norfolk Street.
November 16th at the Chesterfield Gallery on Norfolk Street.
Submit images of your artwork to artauction@wbai.org.
That's one word, artauction@wbai.org.
Hi, this is Alec Baldwin. You're tuned to WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
Anything can happen.
Support WBAI, Peace and Justice Radio in New York.
Anything can happen.
Good afternoon. This is Arthur Schwartz. The show is Advocating for Justice, WBAI 99.5 FM. Welcome to everybody again to this show. We have a couple of special guests this afternoon. The first is Tom Sherbenko. Now, as people may recall who've been listening to my show, this show is about people organizing around issues, and also people trying to make sure that those issues are addressed by government by actually trying to take over the government by running for office. Our first guest is Tom Sherbenko. Tom, are you here?
I'm here, Arthur. Thank you.
Okay. And Tom, besides that, I think I met him in high school. Like, we don't want to know how many years ago that was.
Thank you.
Tom, I got to know really well last year when he ran as a delegate to the Democratic National Convention in support of Bernie Sanders in Staten Island. Now, he is a brave man. You know, just from doing that, he was a brave man. And as everyone knows, Bernie ran for office and told, you know, with a notion of upending the system. He did an amazing job of doing that. And when he stepped down, when he finally gave up at the convention and he told his forces that that he was not going to seek the nomination, and but we should carry on, one of the things that he told people to do, besides organizing around issues of inequality, economic inequality in this country, was he said, "I want you all to run for office. Every one of you in this room," and there was 1,000 of us there, "I want you all to run for office. You have to carry on this fight. We have to carry it on from school boards to city council races. And in Tom's case, he took up that call, and he is running for the position of borough president of Staten Island as a Democrat. In fact, nobody else wanted the job, so he didn't even have a primary opponent. So, Tom, can you tell us about, you know, why it is that you're taking on this incredibly difficult task in red country of running for borough president?
I think, Arthur, I think you really hit on the head. You know, Bernie was so inspiring. He kept talking about political revolution. You know, several times he came to New York back in 2015. And I thought it was so inspiring what he was saying, that we didn't just need, you know, to elect more Democrats or to elect more liberals. He was talking about a political revolution, and that phrase kept coming up. It's not about me, it's about us. That the only answer to our problems was going to be to get so many people active in so many local elections that it would build up this strong force in politics. And it wouldn't be a matter of like, oh, well, you know, we lost this election, but in 4 years we'll elect somebody different. That every year, or maybe even two or three times a year, there would be elections that we could be participating in. And we could use those elections to motivate people who might not even care about a school board election or a municipal election like borough president. And this is the great idea behind that, that this would be a motivational force to actually encourage more political involvement and, of course, to build the kind of political movement we need to solve the problems in our country at the national level and at the local level.
Can you talk about, I recall the last time you and I spoke, you talked about how people in Staten Island actually voted for Barack Obama, at least in 2008, if not in 2012.
Right, both times.
Why was it that? Tell us about the demographics of Staten Island, and then talk about, maybe explain how it could come to be that group of people could have voted for a black Democrat.
Well, what's interesting, Staten Island demographically is rather similar to the nation as a whole, in that, you know, there's, you know, an awful lot of people whose background is European, you know, Caucasian Americans. But there's also a tremendous amount of African Americans and Latin Americans. There are people from every country in the world in Staten Island, obviously in much smaller numbers, so similar to the country as a whole than the Caucasians here. But there's an incredibly diverse demographic. And what happens in elections, because I'm sure for a lot of people, this made them scratch their heads, that 2012, Obama won Staten Island, and 4 years later, Trump wins Staten Island. It doesn't make any sense. It does, of course, have some of the few Republican electeds in New York City are on Staten Island or live in Staten Island. But it's true, in 2012, in 2008, people came out and voted for Barack Obama. And one reason for this, I think it also explains a lot of Trump's votes, was these were, or they were perceived to be, authentic candidates. They weren't recycled politicians. They weren't from one of the parts of the political establishment that so many voters were just so bored with. They seemed different. They seemed fresh. They were saying things that might not ordinarily come up in the usual political debate. And I think it was the excitement of a different kind of candidate that got people out to vote.
Was it just a different kind of candidate? What need on the part of people in Staten Island was Obama addressing that you think you can address in your campaign?
Well, Obama represented the future. I can't put it any other way. Whether it was just identity politics, people saying, wow, this is amazing. We finally got a president running whose first name isn't James or John. We've got a person who sounds like he's from an authentic ethnic group, or the things he was talking about, looking at the economy and how people at the bottom, you know, needed some kind of protection from government, from good government, that they really saw it as, you know, a wave of the future. And certainly a lot of the things that came out of the Obama administration were looking forward. And, you know, certainly the fight for health insurance that's been going on since before we were born, at least under President Obama, some, you know, definitive action in the Congress took place towards some kind of health insurance program in this country. And, you know, if you want to use that same metaphor, certainly Trump was different because he was looking backward and somehow, you know, summoning up these images from the past, which also appealed to people because, like I said, it was a different original thought than the usual political jargon. But it's that looking forward, that progressive approach, if not progressivism, that Obama was all about, that we're trying to excite in people.
So what are you trying to excite? How are you trying to excite people? You're running against, I don't know, somebody who's been there for one term, two terms? I guess one term, because they're term limited, right?
Term limited. He's been there for one term. He was a three-term city councilman before that. He was the assistant to borough president before that. He's a lifetime professional politician, and I couldn't make that distinction clearer, that this is exactly the kind of person that most people on Staten Island normally wouldn't vote for, because they would say, well, you know, it's the same old stuff over and over again, and things don't get any better, and things don't improve. People just complain more. And rather than sticking to that kind of like, well, he's been there, he knows what he's doing, let's reelect him, we know there's a base on Staten Island for people listening to authentic voices and for people saying, no, we need to think about the future. We need to think about planning things out rather than going along with whatever seems to have been working for the last 20 or 30 years, which nobody really feels is working. But, you know, there's the inclination to change things and then that fear that, well, you know, if we get too much change, it's going to hurt us.
So tell us about, we have listeners on Staten Island, but we've had a lot of people talking on this show about the situation and, you know, the issues for people without money in Brooklyn and in the Bronx and in the Lower East Side and in Harlem and in the Upper West Side. But what's going on in Staten Island? How is it different? How is it the same? What are people looking for change there? What are the issues do they want addressed?
Well, if we want to talk about people without money, well, we know the big problem in New York City, no matter what borough you're in, is rent. Rent's too damn high. Any person that pays rent agrees on that. And the problem we have now with the new real estate boom, that has reached Staten Island, is we're literally at the point now where rents are doubling and tripling, or even worse, landlords realize, well, I can tear down the buildings I own now and rebuild them and build them in a way that rather